Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, part two this week of probate.
Oh, such an exciting
topic,
isn't it?
First time we've talked about probate specifically in quite a while, and
yeah.
You got into all the weeds last week, and are we still in the weeds this week? Is there some relief in sight?
This is probate. It's going to be very weedy, the whole
very
series.
Weedy.
Yes. I don't think there's any relief. Oh, maybe there's some relief coming. Who knows?
Well, give us a bit of a review where we've been and where we're going.
Yeah, we talked about the necessity of a probate. Why do we even need the probate process? And it's not this big, evil thing waiting in the background to pounce on people. It's actually designed because when I die, I can no longer sign my name. I know, huge revelation out there. Mm. So if I can't sign my name, then how does someone, whether it's my spouse, a child, or anyone else who's legally able to represent my estate, how do they move my accounts and my real estate if I didn't put a beneficiary designation on it or it wasn't jointly owned? So those are a couple things we'll talk about later. Mm. And the answer is we need a probate, a legal system to empower someone to sign my name after I die. And it's typically about making sure that my assets can get to the right people, whether that's a creditor because they have legal rights or whether it's to my beneficiaries. So the probate process is a system of legally empowering someone else to move everything that I've owned after I've died. Now, there were also some a list of reasons why we get to probate beyond assets. That's the most common reason why someone has to open up a probate. But if you have minor children, we would need to name a new permanent guardian. That takes a court order.
So naming the guardian is not part of a trust necessarily?
Correct. It's not a part of a trust.
Okay.
It's always in the will. Why? Because the will goes to probate. A trust does not need to go to probate.
Okay.
The will does need to be submitted to a court at any time someone has passed away. So another reason that we may have to open up a probate is if what I call died wrong, which is if I'm traveling home, person crosses the center lane, wipes me out, it's their fault, my wife wants to open up a wrongful death claim on my behalf, but I'm gone, I'm dead in that scenario. So therefore, if someone passes away wrongfully, then we would need to open up a probate in order to sue on behalf of the estate. If there's arguments, if there's a discontent beneficiary, if there is someone who has been disinherited and they think that they were wrongfully disinherited or they want their portion of the estate, then they have to sue the estate. That is going to drive someone to a probate system. And by the way, those other examples, the guardianship, the wrongful death claim as an example, a discontent beneficiary, it doesn't matter if you have a trust, if you use a will, or if you have no plan, those are all going to drive through a court system, and that's called probate. Now, we technically don't have a probate court. We just use the Superior Court of Washington.
Mm.
So other states, I'm licensed in Michigan, and Michigan has a specific probate court. But we just use our standard court system versus having a separate entity or a separate section called probate court. But we call it probate because it's a common terminology. But really all it is just opening up a lawsuit in the court system, in the Superior Court of a county.
And there will always be probate if you don't have a trust or a will.
No.
No?
I don't – no. There are ways to design your estate so that it will avoid probate.
Even without the trust?
Even without a trust.
Okay.
That's correct. Mm. So a trust is the most common way. And in my opinion, it's a better way because there's more instructions and it can last longer than just handing money out. Mm. But a will, as it's designed, is intended to get money to the right people. Okay. So if we have a will, we need to submit it to the court. And yes, that is one way we get to court. But I can have a will, have beneficiary designations, joint ownership on all my assets, and never need the probate process. Mm. Technically, by Washington statute, we're supposed to turn in the will when we have it. So we're always supposed to give it to the court as a permanent record, but we don't have to, quote unquote, open a probate to do that. Okay, we can just file the will only instead of opening up a whole case. But most of the time, there's also creditors in the background. So even though clients are debt-free, they may still have expenses, specifically if you've passed away in a hospital or had a longer-term illness that needed care, and there were expenses and bills that had built up at the end of your life. So you may not have a mortgage. You may not have any debt on your credit card, but most people have a credit card, and there's a monthly credit card amount that is owed, or you have nowadays automatic payments going to your credit card, so it just keeps running up the totals until somebody figures out we should really turn that off. So there's always going to be expenses in the background, and that creates a creditor. So a creditor is another reason that we may need to open up a probate as well. Mm. But no, we can design a plan, even without a trust, that can still avoid the probate process. We'll talk about more of that in future shows about how do we avoid this thing called probate.
Okay.
So we left off last week's show with, well, what are the actual steps in probate? And again, I think attorneys and just experiences of that was so horrible when I had to close my parents' estate and I had to go through a probate. There's this, in the background, this big noise that probate is really bad and really hard and really expensive. Well, let me cover the really expensive part in Washington. In Washington, we do not have a court fee based upon assets. California, Florida, Michigan, New York, these are ones right off the top of my head that I know that they have either statutory attorney fees and or court fees associated with the amount of value that goes through the probate process. Mm. It's my understanding, but I am not licensed in California, so this is just based upon what I understand, which is California can have up to a 10% probate fee. It's really not to the court. It's attorney fees. And it becomes extremely expensive if we take what goes through the probate process and add 10%. So if you have $1 million home, that could be a $100,000 fee. Mm. So places like California have just bare bones, really bad trusts, but their only purpose is to keep the house and some other assets out of the probate because there's a fee associated with going through that process. Washington does not have that. So we do not have anything in statute, to my knowledge, that allows attorneys to charge a certain figure or a certain sum based upon the value of the estate. We do not write a check to the court, like other states would, for a probate fee. So in other states, they don't have to necessarily have a higher fee to open up the probate, but they pay a fee based upon what actually goes through the probate process. So if you had, again, that $1 million home, and let's say there was a 5% probate fee, well, that's a $50,000 check that we're writing to the court system.
Yeah.
We don't have that.
Okay.
That is not Washington. So one of the big evils of probate is that it costs too much. That is not a Washington system. So we don't have a probate fee. What we do have is that you just simply have to open up a court case, and that is a fixed fee. So whatever it costs to to sue someone or to open up a court case, that's the fee that we pay. We pay the traditional court fee to open up a case. It's just, we just call it a probate case, that's all. And then we have the expense of getting, they're called letters testamentary or letters administration. It's what the court gives to the person who is asking to be empowered. So when someone passes away, we go to the court system and because we need the power to sign on behalf of the decedent. To move an asset is the most common thing. So someone, a personal representative, also known as an executor, has to be legally empowered. The court gives a certificate, for lack of better terminology, it's called letters administration or letters testamentary, to that person. And that is the certificate that demonstrates I am legally empowered by the court, by the courts of Washington state, to act on behalf of the estate of whoever you're helping. Mm. So if you go to a bank after someone's passed away and you're trying to get access to a bank account, they're often going to ask for these letters testamentary or letters administration. What they're asking for is, I need legal proof that I can talk to you about someone else's account because they died. Mm. So banks, real estate, these are very common, an investment account, very, very common that they are going to want some type of proof. That's why we need a probate. So the first step is we need to get a death certificate, and we need to get the last will if we have one. Mm. We need to create a petition, submit that into the court process, okay? And then from the court process, we get empowered. Now, we have an amazing thing in Washington, which is non-intervention policy. So the non-intervention statute says the personal representative, again, that's an executor, they do not need to keep coming back to the court and giving check-ins or status reports unless someone complains. Mm. So, in other words, we are not going to intervene as the court's position. We're going to help you open up the case and demonstrate who has legal authority, but unless you need us, we're not going to intervene. We are not going to create a schedule by which you have to abide by and check in with us. Other systems have that process where if you have a probate, you have to make constant check-ins to the court. Mm. We do not. There are certain times when we need to give a report to courts longer than a year or so at the year mark, and when we close the probate, or if a creditor sues the estate, or if someone is disgruntled. Okay. Otherwise, the non-intervention statute is the court's way of saying, we're going to take a background seat. We're here if you need us. We're here if you need us to rule on a specific issue. Otherwise, we're going to entrust the personal representative to do their job honorably and close the estate. And once you're closed, just let us know, is kind of the court's approach. Mm. So non-intervention means we don't have a court schedule to keep checking back in with them. And therefore, in Washington, many attorneys say, well, the probate system in Washington's not that big of a deal. I don't fully believe in that. I don't fully fall in line with that thought process. We can talk about that when we get back from break.
All about probate this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. You like the way Paul approaches this subject and so many others, and you want help from him. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, looking at probate, all the ins and outs of this very important subject. It sounds like, though, in Washington State, it is a lot less complicated.
I don't disagree.
Less expensive, but still involved and still an important discussion.
Yeah, because anytime you open up a court suit, a petition with the court, that becomes a public record.
Mm.
And you used a word in last week's show, which is it's not a private process. And right. I use that terminology quite a bit, which is a revocable living trust, when it's designed properly and when all the assets are integrated with it, it can be a private family closing process. We don't need this court system. So even though there's not a court fee, even though it's not egregiously expensive, then we can potentially avoid that process. So most of the time in my counseling and in the way I approach probate is it's not the primary reason to use a trust. I mean, it can be somebody's primary reason, and that's totally fine. It's not a great. We'll use a trust if you really want to avoid the probate process. But typically that statement is because of hearing that probate is so bad. It's expensive, it takes long, and everything else. So I've addressed that it's not overly expensive in Washington. We open up a lawsuit and we get papers back. We're probably in it for less than $500. Now, just for the court system itself. Now, I would always recommend that somebody utilize the services of an attorney. There are pitfalls going through a probate that an attorney, it doesn't have to be me, but I would highly recommend utilizing the services of an attorney that you trust, that you know, that maybe some people want someone who's close to them in proximity, not a problem. And then, so there's going to be a fee that they need to have because they're going to lead you through the process and their primary objective is to make sure that you do it right, which gives the personal representative, that executor, good protections. It is going to keep them in safely within the rule of law, which means that it's much, much more difficult to find fault, i.e., specifically if you get into disgruntled families or families that are not very close, or if you have that one sibling that's going to go off the rails and you already know it, use an attorney. Don't do this on your own. Can you do it on your own? Sure, there's tons of stuff online. Knock yourself out. There's entire websites devoted to just helping you do fill in the blank stuff. And so I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that, yes, it's not overly complicated. Could somebody do it? Yes. Are they going to do it properly? Probably not. But that's okay. They'll get through the process. They'll get the legal power they need. But most of the time, they don't do creditor notices. They don't close the estate properly. They're not giving beneficiary their proper notices. There's a lot of different pitfalls that could potentially open up a can of worms if things go south on you later down the road. Mm. So again, it's my perspective that it's better to use an attorney that does probates because they're going to keep you safely in line with what the law requires.
Mm.
It's their job to know what the law requires. So there we go. That's kind of the overarching evil probate. I hope I've kind of diluted that thought process because that's actually part of my goal with doing this radio show and with actually doing this specific topic, which is I don't want that big evil thing scaring people to do a certain tool. Yes, we can avoid the probate process, and I'm all in on avoiding the probate process if we can. But that is not the primary concern because it's not so costly as other states. So, and Washington has tried to make it far easier than many other states with the non-intervention powers, with just with the cost of what it is. But there's many other things to be considering in this process.
Well, one of the main things then from my takeaway from what you said for avoiding probate, and you can do that to a degree with a properly designed trust, is it's private, so it doesn't become a public record. And also it seems faster. You can resolve things and get things distributed much faster with a trust. I know that was the case for me.
Yes.
Because I had two trusts. One was well-designed. One was not.
Right.
And they were both from California.
Yeah.
So both long distance. One worked perfectly, turnkey, no problems, got everything squared away quickly. And the other one was, you know, there was other people involved and it took several years.
Yes. And that's the unfortunate part of any type of estate plan is that you mentioned that 50% of people don't have an estate plan. So if you reach the age of 65, okay, that's the dividing line. So 65 or younger, statistics through America is that 50% of that age group do not have any type of estate planning. When you hit 65, i.e. retirement age, then it becomes something important. You've built something up. Many people now have a house that's paid off or getting close to being paid off. You may have a 401k and you kind of go, oh, well, we did okay, so we should probably do this thing called estate planning. We should probably have something around us. Good choice. So yes, a trust then is a private closing mechanism and can work to avoid the probate system. And wills can also be used and still designed to avoid the probate system. But it's not the instrument that becomes the power. It's not the instrument because I can create a will for myself or I can create a trust for myself. My planning is only as good as the person who I handed off to with the proper instructions. So a will is very rudimentary. So let's get into what goes into a will. A will then has four primary objectives. Number one, it is going to name who our personal representative is. Now, I've used that term that someone needs to get the power. So you, if you've listened to the whole show today, you see what the personal representative, also known as an executor, is trying to do. We're trying to move the assets and pay the creditors and close out the decedent's name off of all assets and bills. Okay, that's the primary thing. So number one, using a will is better than nothing at all because it gives your voice to who you want to close your estate. That alone is a very, very big deal. Mm. Otherwise, any person who is associated with you, now there's a pecking order. It goes from spouses to children to other blood family members. So there's a pecking order, but in other words, someone can just step in. And what if it's not the right person? So what if this child who is bullheaded and wants to control everything and you're going, that's not the person that I would want closing my estate, but because they're the dominant personality in the family group, they take it and they overpower everybody like they've done their whole life. And now they're the one who is the executor. Okay. Well, so a will is going to avoid that. It's going to let you have your voice in naming who you want. And then it's going to tell us. So number two is it's going to name who the beneficiaries are. That's a big deal. Now, many people use beneficiary designations or transfer on death designations. Though that's a way to avoid probate. So if a bank account, an IRA, an investment account has a TOD on it, then the bank or the financial institution is going to follow that contract and get it to the right people when they present themselves to the institution with the death certificate. But each beneficiary is going to have to come to the institution to get their fair share. Okay, so a will will name who gets it, similar to a beneficiary designation, similar to a TOD. Then it's going to give court instructions. And lastly, it's going to give guardianship. So that may not apply to everybody, But that's the other thing that it would do, is it would name your guardians. If you have minor children, name your guardians. If you want to implode your family and the and your spouse's family, then don't have a will. And then, goodness gracious, if something happened to both of you, God forbid, but it happens, then we've got two families fighting over kids right after the kids lose their parents. Bad deal. So therefore, get something in writing. That's what a will will do. A will at least give you your voice of who you want to close your estate. Where do the assets go? And it will name a guardian if that is your scenario as well. So all of this is wrapped around that if you don't use proper TODs, you don't have joint accounts, then your assets are going to have to go through the probate process. A will then typically, or no estate plan will typically move things in that direction versus, yes, a revocable living trust, when properly designed, can avoid that process. I've also talked about some things that we just have to get there, like minor children, and make it a private family closing process. In my opinion, why not save the probate? Why not avoid that? I like to think I know what I'm doing, and it takes me a minimum of 6 months to close a probate, a minimum of 6 months. And that's because there's certain statutory things that we must do before we can start feeling comfortable and confident to actually having the estate at a place where we can wrap it up and start distributing to the beneficiaries. So a trust can be quicker. There's a lot of factors. We'll get into some of these things in our next show of why would it take longer to close any estate, whether it's with a trust or with a will. Why would it take longer to go through a probate? Because you said you had a trust that worked really well, but then you had one that took 2 years. Now, the listening audience may be going, dang, I thought a trust was supposed to close fast. Yes, it all depends. It all depends on whether your assets are in it. Most trusts that I've seen still need a probate just to take the assets and put them into the trust just so that they can be distributed. And so that's a multiple bouncing balls. All of this can be avoided with really good estate planning. But in order to know what you need, what your family needs, what assets you have, how to maneuver those within the estate plan, how to integrate them all, then we need to get you into the office and be able to sit down with you and talk to you.
Okay. And you would like to talk to Paul about your estate issues. And how do people do that, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay. Always good stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.